us this morning, Marty Silver. He is an attorney. He works out of the New York area. He's been practicing law for some 40 years. He also represents a number of floor covering retailers. And Marty, how are you?
I am good. How you doing?
Okay, it's been a long time since we've had you on. Years.
Yeah, years.
It's good to finally trap you. Now, you've got a unique history as it relates to the floor covering industry. Talk a little bit about that and how you got in the floor covering business.
Well, when I got out of the Army back in a long time ago, I had nothing to do. And my friend's father said, can you go help my mechanics move some furniture before they install some carpet? So I met them on a job and I moved the furniture. And the next day he asked me again. And the next day I was kicking carpet in already. You know, they pushed me to do it. They got me some tools and I began working. And then I started selling in the store, the carpet store in Brooklyn. And then went to work for another store. And then I went to work for a distributor, a Barwick distributor. And then toward the end, I worked directly for Barwick. And somewhere in there, I went to law school. And the government paid for it in GI Bill. And here I am. And what happened, as I went to law school, I would tell all of the accounts that I would be calling on, the carpet stores, and they all kind of went through law school with me. And it was interesting. And after that, I became their lawyer. Not that they need a lawyer that often, but when it comes up, they give me a call.
About that. And now still you have, as I recall, a number of floor covering retailers as your clients.
Yeah. From that. Yeah. And a couple of manufacturers here and there I've done work for.
Well, I guess having a background in the industry certainly is, you know, gives you a leg up, I would imagine.
Yeah, it gives you an understanding of what the problems are. And having worked in retail and installation and in wholesale, there's not much about the industry I don't know.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Very interesting. So anybody in New York, you need a lawyer.
Right.
Marty's the guy you need to call.
In New York.
Now, the pandemic, how has that changed your life? Obviously, you sat in your office looking out the window, I suspect, for a long time. But other than that, how's it changed?
Well, we worked at home for a long time. We probably closed the office in New York for a good five months or so. We just worked from home as best we could. But now we've been back for a while and everything is back to normal. I look outside, the parking lot is totally full. And we've gotten busy. Real estate is going crazy in New York. And as are people suing each other. Over flooring and other things.
Well, I guess New York is probably head and shoulders above the rest of the country in terms of filing lawsuits, huh?
Yeah, usually is.
What are the most common suits that floor covering people file?
Generally, if there's a defect in the material or something, the end user, the customer, will come to the retailer, and the retailer will go back to the manufacturer, and we'll get an inspection done, and usually the manufacturer will say it's there are no manufacturing defects, and the retailer will fight with his consumer. And eventually it gets resolved. Most of the retail complaints are relatively small. So a lot of them don't even end up in court. It could be a few $100s, could be a couple of $1,000s. Usually you find it's installation related rather than manufacturing defects.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of guys out there who are hold themselves out as installers are not that savvy on it.
So over the years, have you seen more cases where the installation is at fault?
Yeah. A lot. And another thing we've run into recently is with the with wood. All of a sudden, you know, there's a ton of wood being installed with flooring. And nobody seems to know how to do it right. I mean, I must have 10 files sitting on my desk with complaints about wood, and it's typically the spaces in the wood, and it's coming up or something that wasn't put in right. A lot of that, because a lot of they're installing it with installers who have no idea what they're doing. That's wood. That's been the latest problem.
And you have, as you say, you have a lot of those.
Yeah. Wood is major. Carpet, not so much anymore.
Well, I guess they're putting down wood instead of carpet, I suppose.
That's the idea. A lot of hard surface today, yeah. We had some problems with, indirectly with installation, with one interesting case we had recently, just with installers, speaking of installers, where a lawyer sued the retailer on the claim that the installer wasn't properly paid, that he wasn't getting overtime. And the installer would put in an 8-hour day. Once you go over 40 hours, you're entitled to overtime, time and a half for every hour over 40. And the question was, the installer would work a 9-hour day with the theory that he'd take 1 hour off for lunch. But the installer said, no, I never took lunch. That he worked right through. So it was 1 hour every day that he was entitled to overtime, which he should have been taking lunch for. So that's been another problem with labor laws. We run into that a lot lately also.
How was that resolved? I mean, it would seem like normally people get off for lunch whether you eat or not, I suppose.
Well, you should, yeah. But here, you know, he's working out of the office the entire time. It's not that he's sitting there doing it. So you don't know what he's doing. And he says, I never take lunch. And he has records, a little notebook or something, you know, every day I start and every day I finish. And those records are the records, because the retailer doesn't have any records. He doesn't know, really. So the employee's records become the records and become binding.
So then in the state of New York, that holds true for, you know, for all installers in the state of New York, they will get overtime?
That'd be federal too, man. That's all over. There's a lot of lawyers looking around just trolling for stuff like that.
I suppose you've had some pretty bizarre cases that you've worked on. Talk about some of those.
Well, we had one where the dealer ordered, it was probably 10 rolls of carpet or so, that he put in his warehouse to install in a condominium. And the condominium wasn't ready yet. So it sat in his warehouse for maybe 3 months. And finally, when it was ready to be installed, he realized that it was the wrong color. Totally wrong, not even close. And he went to the manufacturer and said, you should be the wrong goods. And they said, well, you know, you're supposed to inspect it. And they did hire me. It was in New York. And we did make a motion to dismiss his case based on the fact that he had an obligation to inspect it within a reasonable time after he received it, or he's deemed to have accepted it. And the judge agreed. You know, he said, well, I would have had to open the roll and unroll it, and we said, no, you take a knife and you cut the right at the edge. You could see the color. That's all you had to see was the color. And the judge agreed with us, and he was stuck with 10 rolls of something he didn't need.
Oh, my gosh, after all that time.
Right. And he didn't talk to me after that. But that's another story.
I bet there's books full of weird stories like that over time. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, after 40 years in the business.
Yeah. Going back with wood flooring, I guess it was, there was a condominium was installed. One dealer did the entire condominium with wood. And they complained that there were spaces in the wood. They complained to the attorney general that there was a fraud involved, that the contractor who put it in committed a fraud somehow, and the attorney general didn't get involved. And we met with the attorney general at the site. And when I say the attorney general, assistant attorney general, and he looked at the floor and he reached in his pocket and took out a dime. And he said, I used the dime test. And he said, if I can get a dime into the space, it's too much. If I can't get the dime in, it's fine. and he couldn't get the diamond.
that's
and it's what I'm very happy. Not very scientific, but
yeah,
but it worked.
That's something you could use, I guess, in the future, huh?
Oh yeah, for sure.
I ask a lot of people in this industry about the shortage of installers. Obviously, that's something everybody in the industry is aware of. That's evidently really taking a toll out there, especially, well, I guess, you know, certainly in the area that, you know, that you serve.
Right. Yeah, even with this lawsuit with the installer with the overtime and the lunch hour, he still kept him on. He still employed him because he needed him. He was a good worker. And so you had to give him a couple of extra bucks here and there. He was willing to pay it to keep the guy because he just couldn't find anyone else.
Now, how about residential versus commercial? I'm sure I have to imagine there's more residential suits involved. Talk about that.
Yeah, as I said before, most of the residential that we come across involves nothing major in dollars and cents. It's more of people unhappy with the way it looks, or people with a streak in the carpet or something like that. And again, most of those are resolved in a small claims court if it gets that far. Now, commercial, on the other hand, can involve, you know, big dollars. We've had some, you know, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And there, we really get involved in a case. Just as an aside, one thing we found from the contractor's point of view, one major tool they have in collecting money when the end user is unhappy or finds something that they don't like or makes up something that they don't like, which is very common, they'll find a problem that doesn't exist to avoid paying the full amount. And the contractor can file a mechanics lien. Mechanics liens, we found, are extremely, extremely helpful in collecting money from big end users and big commercial jobs. Even the manufacturers, or the material providers have the right to file a mechanics lien for the material they provided, even though they're not installing it. If it goes in to improve the building, they can file it. And once in a while, we come across a manufacturer who knows enough to do that, which helps a lot. So in the commercial jobs, we do end up going to court and we do end up having trials, as opposed to the residential, which is small claims, or we try to resolve it. The retailers, the small retailers who get sued by a customer, we usually tell them, there's a provision in the UCC where they can go back to their manufacturer and say, well, whoever they bought it from, actually, and say, I've been sued on the basis that, on the claim that the material you sold to me is defective. And under the Uniform Commercial Code, I am demanding that you defend me in this action. And that if you do not, then you'll be bound by the result. So if the retailer sends that notice and then he loses the case, he can go after the manufacturer, and the manufacturer has no defense, which is a good thing to have from a retailer's point of view.
Interesting. You mentioned earlier that many of these cases end up, well, it wasn't my fault, it was the installer's fault, it was the manufacturer's fault, it's somebody else's fault.
Right.
Is that what happens in the vast majority of cases? I mean, and how do you solve something like that?
If you can't resolve it, most cases do get settled. Most retailers, most manufacturers look to settle it because it doesn't make sense to pay a lawyer a ton of money and with the possibility that you still might lose. So they do settle it. If it goes to trial, you've got experts to come in. And unless there's a ton of money involved, it doesn't make sense to try these things.
Okay.
So most of them do get involved, but you may go through the discovery process. You may have depositions, DBTs, and try to pin blame where it should be. But, you know, you can always get an expert to say this is defective and get another expert to say it's not defective.
You know? But the lawyer gets paid no matter what.
Like, it's paid either way.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. And I guess, you know, you end up in court with the same clients over and over, I suspect, don't you?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And it's interesting that it's always the same clients. Some clients are very litigious, and they'll file a suit for everything, or they'll ask me to file a mechanics lien if the payment is a day late. We'll file a lien. And others I almost never hear from. It's the nature of what they do, I guess. But the ones that are litigious do tend to get paid, and the other ones sometimes don't.
You're waiting for that check. I guess you got to take, you know, whatever action you feel you need to.
Yeah. So some go right after the, you know, especially the commercial stuff, where they're going after the end user or the general contractor often.
Have the cases that you've become involved in changed over time? And what I'm wondering is, if they go in cycles sometimes, I mean, it's trendy to file this kind of suit as opposed to some other, and then everybody sees that it's maybe a good idea, so a lot more people evidently file suit like that. Does anything like that happen?
Well, I mean, lately, from what I see, not necessarily floor covering related, but these labor law cases, there are attorneys who are jumping on these things. Like I have one now, or two now, where they have one employee who feels that they were underpaid for whatever reason, and they'll bring, it's sort of like a class action lawsuit, and they'll have the opportunity to send notices out to everyone who's employed by that same employer, or even another company that the same owner has the same ownership, and they'll go after all these employees, and they'll get they'll turn it into some sort of a class action, and they'll settle it for decent money. That's been a fad lately, I think, the labor law cases. Other than that, like I say, the main thing we've noticed lately is wood.
Yeah,
everybody has a problem with the wood flooring.
Well, and that goes back to the installer, who, as you said, probably isn't well versed on installation of wood products.
Right. What you have to do with the wood. The wood has to be left out for a while. It has to be acclimated to the environment. It's a whole involved thing. And these guys just don't do it. They don't know.
Yeah. And I guess it's interesting that, you know, your clients, there are certain clients that are more likely to file suits over and over and over again than others, I suppose. And that's in their gene pool, I guess.
Exactly. Some you never hear from, and some, the smart ones, at least in the retail end, they resolve it immediately. When I worked in retail, I sometimes thought that if we screwed something up just a little bit intentionally, and let the customer call and say, hey, you messed this up, and we run back to fix it right away, you'd make a friend for life. As opposed to the one who fights every little thing and gets nowhere and just makes enemies.
Yeah. Well, it seems like these days people are more anxious to develop a customer for the long term as opposed to a one-shot deal, where maybe 20, 30 years ago, they didn't have that attitude.
Maybe. It's a word of mouth. I mean, the business is really a word of mouth business. It's on the retail end. It really is. It's advertising will bring some people in. Advertising a low, low price will bring some people in, but maybe you don't even want those people. Word of mouth customer that they really, really want.
Now, as you mentioned, you were a salesperson in the flooring business. You were an installer in the flooring business. If somebody asked you today, Marty, come out here, I got an installation, could you do it?
No, I can't even bend down anymore.
I got you. Last question. There's a lot of retailers that are watching us and listening to us at this point. What would be your best advice in terms of how they should look at the, you know, taking legal action, or how they could respond to legal action being taken against them?
they should never let it get to the point where there's legal action taken against them, unless they're so, so, so right and the customer is so, so, so wrong, which is very seldom. There's usually a little degree, you know, it may be right, it may be wrong. And the retailer has to take the old adage that the customer is always right and resolve these things. Because you can't win in the end. Even if you win, you lose.
That's interesting advice coming from a lawyer, too. And it's so true.
Yeah.
Very good. Marty, I really appreciate you spending some time with us and educating us in this matter. Thanks very much. Well,
okay, no problem. Thank you.
Yes, sir. We've been talking with Marty Silver. He's an attorney, worked out of the New York area. And this is Talk Floor TV.